Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. 18 of our local water systems are failing state standards for safe drinking water. So today, we'll be talking with a panel of experts from the California State Water Resources Control Board. Learn more about the safety of the water you're drinking on our show today, as well as how climate change is impacting water quality and what the state of California is doing to help small rural water districts make drinking water safer. Scammers are preying on owners of lost pets, and we'll tell you how to avoid these rip-off schemes. A senior citizen who lost her El Cajon mobile home in a fire needs help before she can move into a new residence, and we'll have details. The City of San Diego has agreed not to cut access hours at three local lakes this summer. And we have some good news for renters. A new state law prohibiting landlords from charging more than 1 month's rent for security deposits has rolled out in most cases. We'll also have some fire tips for you today as we enter fire season, when California has already had more fires than in recent years. And on Destination East County, we'll have some fun and festive midsummer events coming up, such as the Ramona Country Fair, Pine Valley's Parade and Pine Valley Days, a sip of Julian, concerts, car shows, a play, a camel dairy, open farm day, and more. Plus, we'll tell you about a San Diego State athlete who is heading for the Paris Olympics. And finally, from Public News Service, we'll have some national news headlines, including congressional action on voters' access, details on the federal budget and what it means for you, a failed effort to impeach Attorney General Merrick Garland, and uncertainties in the presidential race. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and the East County Magazine radio show for KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. And my very special guests today are three experts from the California State Water Resources Control Board, Dimitri Stanich, Kristen Abold, and Sean Sturchi. And we're going to be talking today about water quality here in San Diego and San Diego's East County. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So I've taken a look at the latest SAFER dashboard results. And before we get into talking about the results, can you give our listeners just a little bit of background about how these SAFER tests came about? Because we had 18 local water districts that had failing results and another 16 that are considered at risk. So go ahead and give us a little bit of background about this, if you could.
Sure, I can step in. Hi, this is Kristen. My unit is responsible for identifying failing water systems and our at-risk water systems. I think what's important is to clarify that when we're talking about failing water systems, these are not water systems that are necessarily delivering unsafe water to their customers.
Yeah, that's important.
It's very important. I know that there can be some confusion out there. Failing is really a category of priority systems that we have for our program so that we know where to focus our resources, our funding and technical resources. Our failing water systems are those that have violations with open enforcement actions. It means they are not in compliance with a regulation or a piece of legislation, and they are required to do something about that. And if they haven't done that requirement, they may be working towards a solution, but they stay on our failing list. So that is our failing list of water systems. And we do have criteria posted online that speak to how a water system gets on and off that list.
Yeah, I've got the list here. My question would be, how concerned should people be? Some of these districts, let me just read off the names of them. First of all, we've got Barrett Lake, which had nitrate problems, Campo Elementary School, nitrate, Cuyamaca Water District, which had E. coli, manganese, and iron, Descanso Community Water District and Guate Mutual Benefit Corporation both have uranium issues. Heavenly Oaks, manganese, Indian Hills Camp, uranium, manganese, particle activity, Lake Henshaw Resort, aluminum, iron, manganese, Lake Morena Views, nitrate, Lake Wolford Resort, they didn't list the reason, Oakvale Park, uranium, Palma Valley Water, nitrate, selenium, some acids, Quiet Oaks Mobile Home Park, nitrate and nitrite, Rancho Santa Teresa Mutual Water Company was uranium, manganese, and gross alpha particles. Twin Lakes Resort, arsenic. Same with Warner Unified School District. And then we had Willowside Terrace Water Association with uranium, nitrate, and nitrite, and the Winola Water District with manganese. And another 16 that were found at risk, but you know, not actually failing tests. And we've got the list of those on our website, but there's quite a few of those out in East County. And some large ones that were never assessed. But how concerned should people be in these specific districts with those particular contaminants that we read off? And what is being done to make the water safe? I mean, can people be drinking this water right now and not worrying about it? Or are any of these on boil water or bottled water orders right now?
And let Sean answer some of those questions, but water systems are required to notify their customers if water is unsafe to drink. Mm-hmm. And so their customers would know whether or not they can trust the tap. Sean, do you have any details on these systems?
Yeah, most of them we're pretty familiar with, and just kind of want to break down, you know, the chemical constituents that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So for example, iron and manganese, it's very prevalent in well waters in East County, and there's quite a few water systems out there that have or are in the process of installing treatment. Those that aren't are exceeding the standard, they likely have some sort of enforcement document action issued to them, such as a citation or a compliance order that requires them to come up with a corrective action plan to install treatment to bring the water back into standards. And so specifically for iron and manganese, that's considered a secondary standard. Mm-hmm. And the concerns are with aesthetics. So it's mostly a color and can be a turbidity issue as well. If the
it's
iron
not really dangerous. In other words, even if you drank
correct.
It, I like the way it looks, but it's not going to hurt.
Correct. It's an aesthetic.
As opposed to say nitrates or nitrites that can, one of them that can cause like blue baby syndrome and, you know, some in high enough concentrations, right?
That's right. So on the other end of the spectrum, we don't have any systems I'm aware of that have nitrite mm-hmm. MCL exceedances, but we have quite a few that have nitrate in the water. And again, it's the same thing that they have.
There were two. There were a couple of small mobile home parks that had nitrite listed as well as nitrate. Go ahead.
I'd find that data questionable, but yeah, we certainly could look into that for you as a professional curiosity, because I haven't seen it in 25 years of doing this.
Okay.
So, but it's the same thing, except that it's, of course, that's an acute contaminant, as you mentioned, and it's more serious.
Nitrate.
And those systems would be required to have postings, you know, delivered to the customers or postings throughout the service area.
Yeah.
And we have them repeat that posting on a quarterly basis to make sure customers are informed of the issue. And it's important to note with nitrate that the specific concern, you know, as you mentioned, blue baby syndrome, so it affects pregnant women and their infants of 6 months. It doesn't impact the whole entire water system. And that's often some confusions. People
right.
think that it has a health impact to everybody, but it doesn't. It's a subpopulation of concern. Yeah.
Well, it can be serious, though. I know we had a water district in Lake Morena, not the one that's currently on the list, but a different one that was failing on that standard for a long time. And they went 3 years of people being told to drink bottled water out there. It was okay to bathe then, but they were being told, don't drink it, don't cook with it for a long time. And I guess the state saw that by forcing a merger of a couple districts to get that made safe for people.
It sounds very much like you're talking about Lake Morena Oak Shores and Lake Morena Views consolidation project that we're
exactly.
working on now. And it's in the works. They have not actually returned to compliance yet, the Lake Morena Views system, but that is in the works.
So people are still on bottled water in part of Lake Morena right now?
My understanding, the last time this came up was that the state did have a contract to provide for bottled water for the community. I don't know if that's still ongoing or not. I'd have to check with our Division of Financial Assistance to see if it's still an active project.
There seemed to be quite a few here that had uranium and a couple of them that had arsenic, which sounds kind of scary. How high are the levels of those, and how concerning is it in those districts that have it?
Yeah, so the uranium arsenic.
These were like whole communities, like Descanso Community Water District, which serves a whole town. Same with Guatai Mutual Benefit
Right.
Corporations. These weren't just camping, locations. Some of these were actual entire towns that are affected.
Yeah. So arsenic and uranium are naturally occurring, and they're found basically in fractured rock wells because the rocks contain uranium, arsenic, and they leach that out into the well water. So it's very common in East San Diego County, since I would say 90 something percent of our wells out there are fractured rock.
Yeah. Did
So
that tend to be weather related? At one point, I had heard that they were getting a lot of this because during the drought, wells were going, deeper and deeper into that fractured rock. But we just had record rainfall, so I was a little surprised to hear about the uranium being a problem this particular year. Is this going to be an ongoing, forever problem out here?
I think it's kind of speculation to try to correlate weather with the levels of uranium, arsenic, or nitrate. But there certainly is a relationship out there, but I don't think it's well studied enough, and it could vary from situation to situation. But we do know that there are some years where nitrates will be higher than others, and then uranium can be higher than others. And in general, what we found is some of the shallower wells will typically predominantly have more of a nitrate problem, whereas the deeper wells that have more fractured rock exposure can have higher uranium problems. So in fact, we have systems that had a well that was exceeding the nitrate standard, and they turn around, they drill another well in the general area several hundred feet deeper, and they get rid of the nitrate problem, but now they have uranium as their problem.
Yeah, very problematic. While uranium is naturally occurring, nitrate can be caused by some sort of human-caused things, such as maybe cattle grazing or agricultural runoff. Is that correct? I mean, what are the things that maybe we should be looking at in these areas that have nitrate contamination?
That's correct, but I think it depends on the area. For example, if you're looking in the Pama Valley area, that's probably the case. It's primarily due to the agricultural practices over decades. But if
About
you look at places like Lake Moreno Shores or Lake Moreno Views, we tend to think that the source might be more septic related.
in a second.
So with drilling of new wells, we're very careful with having water systems look at having the proper setbacks from any septic types of contaminating activities. And we increase the minimum setback requirement that's in California DWR well standards, because those wells are in fractured rock, and the
Interesting.
contaminants can travel a lot quicker through fractured rock than they can alluvial.
Fascinating.
So
Now,
we try to keep
something.
them as far away as possible, but there's a lot of
Sure.
stuff out there that's existing that might be too close or just not constructed properly.
Some of them, I assume, are maybe more short-term cleanup issues. Like Cuyamaca had an E. coli problem, which certainly can be serious, but is that one that's more transitory?
I'd say you're right, because typically bacteriological issues can be resolved with, say, for example, taking a well out of service, disfecting it, and
It's a bacterial
and doing the testing to verify that you've basically zapped it and gotten rid of the problem. Some bacteriological issues aren't so easy to get rid of, like iron-reducing bacteria and other situations where the well is actually maybe improperly constructed and too close to a contaminating activity. But we have a way of having water systems address that by, drilling a new well, if that's appropriate. But in general, I think you're right. A bacteriological issue is usually something that a system can take some corrective actions to resolve in a relatively short period of time, on the order of days, weeks.
Got it. A number of districts were not assessed at all. Primarily large districts like, you know, Helix, Sweetwater, you know, Vista Irrigation District, the cities of San Diego, some others, even the County Water Authority. I wondered why they weren't assessed. And I was particularly interested in Vista Irrigation District. They had been, up until a couple weeks ago at least, they were posting on their website that they had a toxic algae problem and were warning people not to drink or let your pets drink the water in, you know, in their reservoir up there.
Lake Henshaw, yeah.
Lake Henshaw, yeah. And interestingly, the day we started asking for the records on that, it suddenly miraculously got taken down off their website. So I don't know if that meant they really cleaned it up or that was a result of our media inquiry. We'd been hearing some complaints that maybe they're grazing too many cattle on the land around the lake up there, perhaps. We're looking into that, and we've asked for records on it. But why was that district and some of the others not tested at all?
So I'm going to defer to Kristen on that as far as the assessment criteria that her group uses for those larger water systems. You mentioned that.
Particularly when there has been an ongoing toxic algae issue, too. I wondered.
I can speak to that, but I wanted to answer the first part of the question first.
Thank you, Kristen. Sure.
I'm happy to address this one fairly quickly before I move on. So all large community water systems are assessed for failing. Again, our criteria for how we determine a failing system is included on our webpage, very detailed, which violations and violation categories will qualify as failing. And that's gone through a very rigorous public process.
Okay, it must be in a different place. Maybe you can send that to me because it...
Yeah, if you can't, yeah, if you're having trouble finding things, we can definitely send them to you.
Yeah, I'll list some more of districts that were not assessed, and these were...
The only systems that are not assessed in our work are large water systems for risk. And that is at the decision made by our stakeholders, as well as our leadership at the board. The feeling is that when we look at historical failing system data, you know, 99% of all of those systems are small to medium-sized systems. And therefore, the criteria that we're looking at for risk really needs to be tailored for those small and medium-sized systems.
Okay. I know our time is limited, so I'd like to hear about what the state of California is doing. I know in 2010, they declared safe drinking water a human right, and then in 2019, SB 200 created a fund with money from cap and trade to help water systems in disadvantaged communities clean up unsafe drinking water. So I'd like to hear how that's going. Is there enough money to get these systems out here cleaned up? And what should people in these communities know about what they need to do to try to get some of that grant money and get these water systems made safer?
Maybe Dimitri, you could take those on, talking about the accomplishments of the SAFER program and how folks can get engaged.
Sure. Yes.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Kristen.
Sure. The SAFER program has been working since 2019. Actually, this is a little bit more complicated issue, and I'd be happy to take this offline. If we have more questions specific to Sean's expertise, we can address those, and then you and I, Miriam, can talk about the successes of the SAFER program.
I can kind of provide some insight, Miriam, as far as the process goes.
Thank you.
We have, you know, Division of Financial Assistance that has available, you know, various pots of money, whether it's SRF, SB 200 money, or other. And we basically take the system through an application process to either do a planning project to identify, you know, what the best solution is for the system, or the second phase of that is a construction project. And at the time that the contracts are issued, or either the planning or the construction project, or Division of Financial Assistance makes a determination on which pot of money is most suitable for the project. And they go through a check to make sure that the project basically meets the criteria of that particular funding pot. But as far as from my experience and the current status, I don't think there are any projects that are being denied. I won't say there aren't any limitations on money, because money is...
Yeah.
is
and I did but, wonder, I know you all said that just because it fails doesn't mean a water system is unsafe, but I did wonder, are there any on this list of 16 that have failed repeatedly now that are unsafe? I know they're supposed to notify the customers, but, you know, are there any of them that you would be particularly concerned about off of that list right now?
Well, in general, we're tracking all the systems that have these primary MCL exceedances, like the nitrate, uranium, arsenic. And in general, we have or are in the process of taking enforcement action, such as a citation or a compliance order, to get them to have a corrective action plan if they don't already, and also to provide them with the opportunity to apply for funding if that's needed. For example, Lake Moreno Shores, Lake Moreno Views, along with Lake Moreno County Park, we're doing a consolidation project for all three of those water systems now, and that'll help with resolving their nitrate compliance issues, along with some other lower priority, yet still important violations that they have.
I know some years ago, the state, I believe, took over the Live Oak Springs district because at the time they found they were...
That was the county.
County took it over.
The county did, yes.
Right. Falsifying some test, you know, test records and, you know, some things that were clearly, you know, not appropriate to be doing. But has that been an issue anywhere else? Was that just an outlier there? Or in general, are the test results, in your opinion, generally reliable that we're finding here?
I think that was a rare case. We have had a couple of other kind of one-off incidents with single employees that were bad actors, so to speak. For example, the city of San Diego had a sampler that was falsifying some data. And they recognized that, brought it to our attention, and we did take enforcement action, and they resolved that issue. But it is very rare.
So when people complain about government regulation, this is one of those areas where the regulators are helping to keep folks safe and make sure that the drinking water is potable. So Sean, is there anything else that you believe our audience should know out here that I didn't specifically ask you about?
No, we're just available. If you have any follow-up questions, you're welcome to email me, or we can set up another meeting. I did want to touch on your question about Lake Henshaw, because you mentioned some concerns about their microcystin levels is basically what they're using for posting of signage. But I wanted to point out that, you know, Vista Irrigation District actually uses imported water. They don't use Lake Henshaw directly as their drinking water supply. It is within the water supply portfolio, and that water can be transferred from Henshaw. It feeds Lake Wolford, and then from Lake Wolford, it can go to Dixon or to the Escondido treatment plant.
Interesting. And Lake Wolford, well, at least the Lake Wolford Resort failed, but they didn't list the reason why. So that's interesting.
So Lake Wolford Resort is on the list because they have a surface water treatment plant that doesn't meet the technology requirements in the regulation. So once again, we issued enforcement for that some years ago, and we also offered them funding, and they're going through a planning project right now where we're developing the plans and specifications and the CEQA documentation necessary to consolidate them with Valley Center Municipal Water District. The project's pretty far along, so I expect the planning study to wrap up here in the months to come, and we'll get the pipeline constructed, and that system, it will basically no longer be a public water system when the project's done.
Okay. But to be clear, so if Lake Henshaw or Lake Wolford did have a toxic algae problem, are you saying that would not threaten anybody's drinking water? It would only be a problem for, say, you know, people who might have their pets, you know, drinking water from the wildlife, presumably.
Exactly. It's the criteria that they're using for posting is for body contact concerns, pets, and people. It's not a drinking water criteria that they're using. We have a different set of metrics for drinking water.
Okay, very good.
And I think maybe if you're interested in finding out more about it, you can contact Valley Center. But the last time they had a significant algae bloom where the microcystin levels were exceeding those advisories that resulted in the posting, they actually stopped drafting from the reservoir. So in other words, they cut off the source, and that couldn't reach ultimately the drinking water treatment plant. And then in addition to that, if it does, there's also Lake Henshaw, which acts as a buffer and a dilution, natural, not a barrier, but a natural attenuation of those microcystins. And then they also have a treatment plant that can remove some of those as well. So there's kind of a multi-barrier approach that they have a program in place where they're monitoring it, and they have actions that they take if certain levels are exceeded.
Okay. What about forever chemicals? Are we seeing any testing required yet in California, or is that coming down the pike for those? The PFAS, you know.
Yeah, so PFAS chemicals, we have a couple of monitoring orders, a few monitoring orders that have been issued over the years. There's a 2022 is the most recent one that looked at sources that were potentially vulnerable to PFAS. And for San Diego, there are a few systems that were on that list, such as
I was gonna say
City of
that I
San
know.
Diego, Sweetwater Authority. There
Sweetwater.
were a couple.
Interesting. I'd love to see that list.
And then more recently, we issued, I guess, what I'll call a general order that targeted about 4,000 wells with public water systems. And that one order is a bit different because it's a one-time monitoring event, and it's also paid for by the state. There's no cost to the water system. The state is contracted with a lab to have those analysis done. And that effort in part is for, developing occurrence data and more information with looking at not just the standard method of a lab analysis, but also to look at some other methods and to evaluate that information to help us with basically regulatory development of MCLs for PFAS chemicals in the
Obviously,
future.
I'm going to ask in a minute about can we fix this? But also, I was a little surprised, where is it coming from? I kind of expected that you were going to tell me that our water sources near military bases or airfields or somewhere where the PFAS have been used a lot in things like firefighting chemicals for industrial fires, for airplane fires. But Sweetwater, really, where are the PFAS coming from in Sweetwater, which is in a rural area primarily?
Yeah, I couldn't speculate, and I am out of time, Dimitri. I'm sorry, but
Course, of
like I said,
course.
any follow-up questions, you're welcome to send me an
Just
email, or if you want to set up
direct
another
them to
time
me.
to.
Direct them to me, and I'll make sure that we
Thank you.
get the right staff person. PFAS does fall on a line that is actually being examined at a state level, and Sean is working more on the regional issue. So I would have you talk to somebody else here at the board.
Yeah, I'm very interested in the PFAS issue, Dimitri, and finding out how is there a way to clean them? I mean, they call them forever chemicals for a reason. They don't break down in the environment. So what do you do once it's in the water? Is there a way to remove it?
Well, it's an immensely complex issue, and we are just now trying to get a better understanding. I don't think there are any ways that we've developed to be able to eliminate it from the system, but right now we're gauging, assessing, and looking at the sources, the contents, the distribution, all the parameters that will enable us to figure out how to address this in a scientific process.
Just to add to that, GAC is the best available technology to date for it, and we do have some water systems in San Diego that have already installed that. But
Okay.
that's
All
all
right.
it for me. I
Thank
got.
information. We really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. Take care.
Dimitri, I will let you have the final word. What else do you think that our audience should know about the water quality issues in our region that I may not have asked about or that you want to elaborate on?
Sure. The board just issued a report called the Needs Assessment, which is a part of the strategy that the board is engaged in order to understand the water system needs throughout California. And what this Needs Assessment does is it inventories all the water systems throughout the state and assesses those in need and those that have the competency to continue. And our research has shown that about 98% of Californians receive safe, reliable drinking water on a regular basis with no concerns.
Very good.
The 2% are still struggling with failing or problematic sources, and these are typically small rural communities that have grown up in response to agricultural needs. And so, rather than a utility being developed for them, the group dug a well and decided that this is where they were going to stay, and the community raised up around them. And we're finding finding that a lot of them are struggling to maintain the infrastructure of their system due to the age of the equipment, the technical aspects of the many questions that are demanding of owning and operating a water system, and then the financial resources that are necessary to maintain a steady state water system.
Well, and we see a lot of pressures if somebody comes in with some big new development project, and there's always the worry about where are they going to get the water.
That is something that needs to be addressed before they select an area, because the water systems are becoming more
stressed.
Thank you. That's exactly the word I was looking for. And with climate change and the expected reduction of about 10% less water entering the state, this is going to become a bigger and more serious problem as time develops. So the water board and the state government recognizes the importance of getting our hands around this, and therefore instituted the SAFER program to coordinate the multiple sources of funding and technical and managerial support in order to assist these small communities and get the resources that they need to rebuild their system. In that, we're finding that the best solution for these small groups, our small communities, is consolidation, which is the merging of a smaller system with a larger one. And I could point out too that sometimes even the larger system is larger by a few thousand customers, and they too may be struggling. But the idea is that the fewer number of water systems are easier to maintain. They increases the number of customers, which increases their financial resources, and diminishes the number of individuals that would man a system. So the economies of scale benefit both the smaller system and the larger by expanding the customer base and stretching out the expertise of those operating the system.
Pine Valley residents, I know, are concerned about a proposed cemetery that, I guess, if it's approved, could eventually have up to 25,000 bodies buried over their sole source aquifer. Would you be concerned about that? Do you have any data or experience with large cemeteries going over aquifers in an area where people are dependent on well water? Are their concerns justified?
I couldn't speak to that. I'm not a developer. I don't have any experience in that, but I expect that there would be some kind of analysis or discussion that would employ researchers and scientists in the area that could speak to that point.
And then we have areas like Borrego Springs that's simply running out of water, where at least after years of drought, I think they were really getting in trouble out there with having to make sort of Solomon's choices there. You know, do we give up our golf courses that provide the tourism dollars? Do we give up the, you know, the grapefruit orchards that is our agricultural portion of our economy? Really difficult.
Yeah. This is one of the concerns of climate change, is that it's going to shift the way the water enters the state, the small climates that affect regional crops and those kinds of things. So this is a bigger issue that we are grappling with as expediently as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Things like the uranium, where you're getting into deeper and deeper areas of the wells, probably would have been an issue if we were getting the volume of rain that we were getting, you know, 50 years ago.
That's right. And then I would point to the water strategy that Governor Newsom adopted a few years ago, which is accelerating our looking at alternative uses and sources of water rather than a one-time use of water and it goes into the streams and is lost. We're looking at recycling water, various ways of capturing water that has been used and processing it to be able to redirect it for.
We have, I think, Helix and Padre and some of the others, the large districts, have gone together now on a pure water purification system that's getting ready to roll out. So mm-hmm. We'll all be drinking recycled water very soon in much of these areas. But I wonder if that's eventually what may be coming.
I expect it to be an integral part of the state's plan in the future, that we will use water that comes into the house, use it for the various sources or needs, mm-hmm. and then it be reprocessed and rededicated.
They did a demonstration where they made, you know, beer with this water, and they were drinking it at the press conference to try to demonstrate that it's safe and there's no taste issues.
Absolutely. We do have the technology to process this efficiently and safely and use water that has come into the state multiple times and for multiple applications.
Yeah. Well, but if we think about it, the water that comes from the Colorado River that we've all relied on for years is certainly not pure when it comes in here. There's plenty of campers and hikers and animals that have perhaps relieved themselves along that river, and it all gets purified out. So it's really, you know,
That's right. That's right.
not
It's
to think
going to
about
take,
it as more of the same.
absolutely. It's going to take a paradigm shift in the way people think about water. Historically, water has been a transparent, pardon the pun, available resource to us. You know, we turn on the tap and it's there and reliably safe and plentiful. But with the changing climate and the reduction of water entering the state, we're going to have to think of it more consciously and be more appreciative, I guess maybe the word, or you know, to value it.
Yeah, conserving water and turning to options such as desalinization. There's a desalinization plant locally.
Yeah, but those are immensely expensive, complex systems. And so there are many steps that we can take before it comes to that point.
Absolutely. Well, Dimitri, I really want to thank you so much for
I appreciate that.
For listeners who just tuned in, we have been speaking with Dimitri and earlier two other representatives from the State Water Resources Control Board, all about water quality of our drinking water at water systems across San Diego's East County. So thanks so much, Dimitri, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report on scammers preying on owners of lost pets. When Amanda Everett lost her cat, Vincent, in East County, she posted notices online in hopes of finding help to locate her missing pet. Instead, she says, thieves tried to scam her into giving them money for emergency surgery on her cat, whom they falsely claimed had been brought to a local shelter. The caller used a spoofed ID that said public service and even had Animal Control's phone number on the caller ID. The scammer claimed the shelter had identified the cat by scanning a microchip and asked Everett to pay $3,000 on Venmo for emergency surgery to save her pet's life. But they refused to provide a photo or the cat's microchip number when she asked, so Everett became suspicious. Then the caller tried to shame her, claiming she didn't care about her cat, and she realized it was a scam. Other scammers sought to trick her into giving out personal information that could be used for identity theft, sending her text messages asking for personal ID. They are exploiting the PawBoost platform, Everett told East County Magazine. She has this to say for anyone searching for a lost pet. It's really hard to be savvy of these scammers while grieving a lost loved one. If you are in this situation, please beware of scammers.
Last August, 65-year-old Melissa Taylor lost everything when a fire destroyed her mobile home in El Cajon. Taylor awoke at night to find her mobile home engulfed in flames. She narrowly escaped, but her four cats perished. She has not yet been able to adopt new pets since she's been staying with friends while working to rebuild her life. Now, thanks to the generosity of donors who responded to her GoFundMe plea and a modest insurance settlement, she now has a new mobile home on the same site where she's lived for 19 years. But she needs more help before she can move in. She has no air conditioning or furniture, and she needs a washer, dryer, and some other appliances to make her home livable. You can donate to help her at the Melissa Taylor New Home Fund on GoFundMe.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell. After an outcry by rural residents and Supervisor Joel Anderson, the City of San Diego has revised its budget to eliminate proposed temporary closures of the reservoir at El Capitan in Lakeside, Lake Sutherland in Ramona, and Lake Hodges in Escondido. Though located in the county unincorporated areas, the reservoirs are owned by the City of San Diego. Over 750 constituents signed a letter sent by Anderson to San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria, opposing the city's proposal to cut $59,000 from the budget for the City Lakes Recreation Program. The county chief administrative officer recommended funding to cover the gap. The city's proposal called for an additional month of closure at the El Capitan and Hodges reservoirs, as well as closure of Sutherland Reservoir an additional day each week. Anderson posted on the Friends of San Diego Lakes Facebook page, "I'm happy to announce that our joint efforts secured the funding needed for this budget shortfall from county resources. Because of your quick action and advocacy, your voice was heard. Thank you." He adds, "Your engagement and support have made a significant impact, ensuring that our many lakes and reservoirs remain accessible for our entire community. This collective achievement demonstrates the power of our unified voice and reinforces our commitment to protecting public access for public recreation. The county's revised operational plan includes several other changes, including more money for drowning prevention, county fire, emergency responses, the Calavo Park Project, free transportation for seniors, the Workplace Justice Fund, and a pilot archery project for county parks. Those increased expenditures are planned after a net increase of $3.7 million in revenues was announced." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with some important news for renters. Since July 1st, a new law prohibits many landlords from charging renters more than 1 month's rent as a security deposit. The law does not apply to smaller landlords who own only one or two properties with a total of 4 units or less. Assembly Bill 12, authored by Assemblymember Matt Haney of San Francisco, aims to end exorbitant security deposits of double or even triple the monthly rent that some landlords have been charging. Massive security deposits could create insurmountable barriers to housing affordability and access for millions of Californians, says Haney, who chairs the California Legislature's Renters Caucus. San Diego County has one of the highest housing costs in the nation, with rent skyrocketing in recent years. According to Haney's office, 53% of California renters indicate that they are able to afford their rent, but they're unable to get an apartment because they simply can't afford to pay that 2 months' rent as a security deposit. This pushes many families, including those with individuals making minimum wage, to either forego necessities such as food and utilities or acquire more debt to be approved for housing. For some, it can also lead to homelessness. Massa Faludi, the executive director of California Immigrant Policy Center, says in California's high-cost rental market, expensive security deposits are often imposed on immigrants and people of color, effectively limiting access to safe and affordable housing. By capping high security deposits, AB 12 advances a measure of equity and empowers immigrants and people of color across the state who contribute daily to making our diverse state thrive. But a landlord that East County Magazine spoke with said the change could also discourage landlords from taking a chance on renting to people with bad credit ratings or no credit at all. AB 12 does not affect potential liability, so landlords will still be able to seek damages from tenants who cause damage to property that exceeds the amount of the security deposit.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County. As midsummer heat sizzles, mid to late July brings many fun and festive events. Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona invites you to open farm days on select Saturdays all summer long. The next one is July 20th. You can enjoy a camel and bird show, feed treats to camels, have a camel encounter with photos, pet mini sheep, and more. You can also take a camel ride and shop for camel milk products, such as lotions, soaps, and chocolates. For tickets and details, visit cameldairy.com. Amusement rides, carnival games, and live music are all part of the fun at the Ramona Country Fair, July 26th through 28th. There's also an off-road show, western shows, food and beverage vendors, and more. This family fun event is presented by the Ramona Chamber of Commerce and held at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. For a full schedule of events and tickets, visit ramonachamber.com. Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa presents Neil Simon's classic comedy, The Odd Couple, throughout the month of July with a twist. Instead of Sloppy Oscar and Neat Nick Felix, the leads are female roommates Olive Madison and Neat Nick Florence Unger. For tickets, visit lamplighterslamesa.com. On Saturday, July 27th, the 8th annual Sip of Julian features tastes of wine, craft beer, cocktails, and hard cider, along with small bites at every venue. The self-guided event runs from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and is for those age 21 and up. Attendees will receive a commemorative glass and wine tote. This event is a fundraising benefit for Julian's annual Country Christmas and Tree Lighting Celebration. It's co-hosted by Julian's Chamber of Commerce and the Julian Merchants Association. Tickets are available at visitjulian.com. The Pine Valley Parade will be held July 27th, starting at 9 a.m. in Pine Valley along Old Highway 80. After the parade, you can enjoy family activities in Pine Valley Park, including live music, kids' activities, and vendors. On July 20th, award-winning Egyptian-American actor, producer, director, and comedian Rami Youssef will perform at the Magnolia in El Cajon. He created, produces, directs, and stars in the hit Hulu show Rami, for which he won a Golden Globe Best Actor Award and two Emmy nominations. His HBO comedy special won a Critics' Choice Award. His latest creation, Netflix's series Mo, focuses on a Palestinian refugee in the U.S. For tickets, you can visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com. Another highlight of those hot summer nights in Hacumba Hot Springs is a concert series at the Bathhouse Bazaar. Late July shows include Psychedelic Rock with Federal on July 20th, Braxton Hicks Rowdy Country on July 27th, and Low Vault Sturdy Blues Rock and Soul on July 29th. Read more about these entertainers and reserve space at Hacumba.com. Viejas Concerts in the Park in Alpine includes Marco Registrado on July 19th and psychic medium Joanne Girard on July 27th. Tickets are available at viejas.com. The 30th annual La Mesa Classic Car Show and Live Music event rolls into downtown La Mesa on Thursdays from 5 to 8 p.m. in July and August. Visitors can stroll down La Mesa Boulevard between 4th and Spring Streets to view classic cars and other vintage vehicles, as well as enjoy live music by local bands and DJs. El Cajon's Concerts in the Park series continues every Friday night all summer long from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Promenade. July's lineup includes Fortunate Son, High Tide Society, Harmony Grove, and Journeyman. There are also Cajon Classic Cruise car shows every Wednesday from 5 to 7:30 p.m. in the same location, from American Muscle Cars to Hot Rods galore. Find a full schedule of each week's themes and entertainers at downtownelcajon.com. The City of La Mesa's Concerts at the Park will be held in the amphitheater at Harry Griffin Park each Sunday in July from 6 to 7 p.m. Upcoming performers include Zealand, 8-Track Highway, and Sonic Epidemic. For details, visit lamesaparks.org. Summer Movies in the Park is the largest family-oriented outdoor movie series in San Diego County, with dozens of hosting sites and over 100 screenings starting 15 minutes after dusk at parks across our region. For a full listing of movies in county parks all summer long, you can visit eastcountymagazine.org and click on our festivals and events section. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and KNSJ bringing you some special information as we enter fire season. How prepared are you for an emergency? Just as you change your smoke detector batteries whenever you change your clocks for daylight savings time, it's also a smart idea to check your emergency kit at the start of every fire season. That means now. Of course, emergencies such as an earthquake or a blackout can happen at any time with no advance warning. For households with children, elderly people, or those with limited mobility, being ready to take action is especially important. Updating your emergency list should start with a checklist. Did you add or lose any members of your household? Be sure to have enough supplies for everyone, including people and pets. Check the dates on canned goods and other perishables, and be sure that stored drinking water is still good. Create an emergency plan for your family. Identify two places for the family to meet. One should be somewhere outside your home, but close by, perhaps a neighbor's or a street corner. The other should be a spot away from your neighborhood, just in case the entire area is evacuated and you can't return.
Using information from SDG&E and supplementing it with some additional tips, we've come up with the following helpful suggestions to be prepared. Practice an evacuation plan with your family, including children. If they get used to doing something when there is no panic, they will be much less frantic should a real disaster strike. Review emergency plans at your workplace, your child's school or daycare center, friends' homes, and other places where members of your family regularly spend time. Plan safe routes away from your home and business to high, safe ground, and be sure all family members know the routes. Have alternative routes in mind if the first option is blocked. Develop a plan for family pets and livestock, and have a backup plan because some evacuation shelters may not allow animals. Designate a friend or family member outside the area who all family members can call if you become separated, and that way you can know if everyone is safe. Have family members memorize that phone number in case cell phones die and you can't access the phone directory. Keep current important documents in a safe deposit box or send copies outside the area to be kept by a trusted relative or friend. Be sure that you can access your insurance policy and have a copy of your deed, for example. After Hurricane Katrina, when banks were destroyed by flooding and hurricanes, many homeowners had a lot of trouble putting in their insurance claims. Have a set place for your emergency supplies. Your emergency kit should include, at minimum, a 3-day supply of bottled water, 1 gallon per person per day, plus extra for pets or anyone with special needs, a 3-day supply of packaged, dried, and canned food that can be prepared without cooking, a first aid kit, and essential medicines for all family members, a pet carrier for each pet and pet food, a manual can opener, a portable radio, plenty of batteries, and flashlights kept in waterproof bags, an extra set of car keys, credit cards, and always plenty of cash in case the power is out when ATM machines and credit card machines are not working. Special items for infants, elderly, or disabled family members. It's also important to make sure that you always keep plenty of gas in your car since pumps won't work when the power goes out. Also be sure you have a car charger for your cell phones since during a power outage you don't want your cell phone to go dead. Car chargers are cheap, often less than $10, but can be crucial in an emergency. Know how to operate everything if the electricity is off, the keyless entry to your home, and an electric garage door and gates, for instance. Be sure you know how to open them manually. If you have a gas main, know how to shut it off in case of a leak or a disaster. Include instructions on how to shut off anything that's complicated in your family emergency kit. It's better to have supplies ready and never need them than to need them and not have them. SDG&E has also prepared some videos on fire season planning and general emergency preparedness that can be accessed in the Wildfire and Emergency section of our website at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This is Miriam Raftery with a sports report. San Diego State Hall of Famer Shanika Ricketts has qualified for the Paris Olympics with her performance in triple jump at the national championships. The women's triple jump qualification round will take place on August 2nd with the finals the following day. A native of Jamaica, Ricketts will be competing for the third time with the Jamaican national team. In 2021, she just missed out on the podium, finishing fourth. Ricketts was one of 5 Aztecs competing at Olympic trials over the last couple of weeks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This will be one of the most important votes that members of this chamber will ever take in their entire careers. And it's an issue we never thought we would have to actually address, but that moment has come to us now.
Speaker of the House Mike Johnson was one of more than 220 votes in favor of the SAVE Act, a controversial bill requiring proof of citizenship to vote. House Republicans are praising its passage, saying it'll crack down on non-citizen voting in federal elections. That's already a crime and is vanishingly rare. Democrats charge the bill actually aims to put ballot roadblocks in front of students, seniors, and minority citizens. Meanwhile, Florida Republican Ana Paulina Luna's bill to hold Attorney General Merrick Garland in inherent contempt of the House failed by 6 votes, including 4 Republicans who sided with the Democrats. Luna describes the stiff financial penalties her bill would have imposed.
The Speaker of the House of Representatives shall impose a fine, which may not be paid with appropriated funds, on Attorney General Garland of $10,000 per day until such a time as Attorney General Garland complies with subpoena of the House of Representatives by turning over the audio tapes.
While the Senate's 2025 budget is gaining bipartisan support, the House failed to pass its version by a narrow vote. This comes as a proposed budget from the Republican Study Committee would extend Trump-era tax cuts, which benefit corporations and the wealthy. Porter McConnell with Americans for Financial Reform says its radical measures call for slashing hugely popular programs to pay for them.
They propose cutting $1.5 trillion from Social Security, and they propose to do that by raising the retirement age to 69 and by lowering the benefits that you get when you do retire.
President Joe Biden's campaign is downplaying a small gaffe before a press conference where he hoped to reassure voters about his acuity. When introducing Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, Biden initially called him President Putin, the name of the Russian leader who invaded Ukraine. During the conference, Biden insisted he is the best person to lead the ticket and he's just going to keep moving. Doubts about Biden's age seem to have only slightly shifted polls in favor of former President Donald Trump. Vice President Kamala Harris, who many say should take the top spot on the Democratic ticket, says Biden should stay in the race.
Now, we always knew this election would be tough, and the past few days have been a reminder that running for President of the United States is never easy, nor should it be. But one thing we know about our President, Joe Biden, is that he is a fighter.
Behind the scenes, former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi is reportedly lobbying for Biden to step down, but the younger leader she herself made room for, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, says Democrats are staying united and focusing on working for ordinary Americans.
The affirmative agenda that we have for the American people related to lowering housing costs or ending price gouging or growing the middle class, defending democracy and fighting for reproductive freedom.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.